Keep that in mind.
Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani.
Hey, from Los Angeles, the big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in radio land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver's caregiver. Try saying that fast three times. Coming to you live globally through the world famous Blog Talk Radio Network, as well as YouTube and iTunes and a bunch of other places. And for your listening pleasure, you can listen to this show on all those sites, especially our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And our goal here is to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Now, I'm not really from Hawaii. I'm just pretending I'm in Hawaii. So don't get all excited there. I want to tell you all that we have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrienne Gruberg. Say hello, Adrienne.
Hello.
And today we will be interviewing caregiver advocate Donna Thompson, founder of the Caregiver's Living Room. Sounds like a nice place to visit, the living room. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and they're selfless and they're sacrificial souls, but they have this tiny little problem. They're very prone to that thing called burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. And we can actually learn a lesson from the airlines because they tell us in the event of an emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first before you attempt to help your loved one with their mask. And I know that sounds like a very selfish thing to do, but, you know, consider if you were a parent and your kid's gasping for breath and all the masks fell out of the ceiling and the flames are coming out of the engine. It would be very challenging for you as a parent to obey that selfish order and put your mask on first, right? You would go after your loved one. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. It just seems so natural. So whatever synonym for natural is, because my brain just isn't working right now. Well, give me a synonym for natural, Adrienne.
Oh, I'm just thinking of it's an inbred, it's a reflex.
Yes, it's a reflex. It's just heredity to want to throw your body in front of, a speeding locomotive to save your child. And caregivers almost have that same reflex for their loved ones. You know, they're like the mother hen or the mother bear. You know, never bother a baby bear if the mother's around or you're in trouble. Well, anyway, the airlines also know so well that if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved one, you will most likely black out. And then guess what? You're not going to help anybody with anything. So that's the deal. And we also talk about grief and loss here because anytime we suffer a loss, we go through grief. And it's actually a process. And they gave it a name, the grief process. And there's no shortcuts around the grief process. You must go through the grief process. You know, like if you're going from Staten Island to Manhattan, you must take the Verrazano or the ferry. There is no other way to get there unless you want to swim. And so the I'm so funny today. All my New York jokes. Well, unfortunately, folks, no shortcuts. You got to go through it, okay? And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. And I do want to take this time to thank my last week's guest, Linda Bice, for taking Adrian's place, because Adrian was under the weather. And I guess she had laryngitis, so it's hard for her to talk when you have a laryngitis because nothing comes out. And our guest, Camille Supersons, speaking on how you can save money, time, finding important free caregiver resources. Adrian, you missed a great show. This book, let me hold it up. This book will save a caregiver thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. I'm amazed, and I'm a skeptical
and
kind
hours.
Of guy. And hours. So just a reminder, that show is on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And you can listen to it anytime you want. This show is on our website. They're all on our website, all 150 or so of them. And we're so excited that our long-awaited third book is so getting closer and closer and closer and closer and closer and closer to becoming a reality. The pre-purchase process is approaching soon. I know you've heard me say this 100 times. Well, maybe not 100 times. But I know you'll all want to pre-purchase your copy. And it's called It's My Life Too, When to Say Yes, When to Say No in Reclaiming Your Caregiver Sanity. Our goal is to pre-sale 10,000 books to our caregiver followers. I mean, we have almost 34,000. Adrian has almost over 160,000, maybe more than that, on Facebook alone. So we just want to get the message out there to caregivers how they can put their needs first without compromising the needs of their loved one. You know, it can be a win-win. Because like in the plane, just because you're putting your mask on first doesn't mean you're going to ignore your kid. You're going to put their mask on too, but yours comes first. Now, enough of that. Hey, a big welcome to our guest, Donna Thompson. Welcome to the show, Donna. I know you were having technical difficulties with seeing video, but at least we can hear your voice. Thank you so much for agreeing to this interview. I'm so excited to have you on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I was chuckling to myself when I was listening to the intro, which talks about sometimes caregivers have a really bad day. And right this afternoon, I'm having a lot of technical difficulties, which sometimes is just that one more thing that caregivers have to deal with when the tools that we need to communicate our message or to get whatever we need in a given day just don't work. And it's so frustrating. But anyway, I'm very, very pleased to be here with you both.
Well, thank you. We are the joy, the honor is ours. So I will just want to throw some questions out to you. But the first thing I want you to do, because a lot of people don't know who you are, why don't you take a minute or two and just introduce yourself? I like to ask my guests just who is Donna Thompson and why was she put on this earth? Talk about a deep question. It's all yours.
Well, I first and foremost, I am a caregiver, and I care for our son, Nicholas, who is now 28 years old, and he has severe multiple disabilities, and we cared for him at home until his 28th birthday, he is very medically complex. And we ran really a home ICU style hospital for him. Now he lives in a care home nearby, and he's doing very well. But, you know, I think life has a funny way of keeping us where we're meant to be. And I think I was meant to be a caregiver because my mom is now 95 and is very frail. And she's taking up, you know, more of my caregiving energy now. And it's funny, a lot of their issues are very much the same. So I advocate for care across ages and abilities because I think that it really is an issue that concerns us all. Certainly concerns everybody I love in my family, that's for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that was a nice introduction. And I wanted to ask you, what are the lessons that you have learned from a life of caregiving? I assume you've learned something.
Yes. Well, I think I'm going to, you know, we could talk about this certainly for a whole hour and many more hours after that. But I'm going to focus, I think, on two lessons that I think are are the most important. And the first one is that we cannot give care alone. I think that, and that has many implications, because sometimes accepting that we need others to help us care for the people we love feels like a betrayal of a promise to give care, a promise of love and abiding to service of a person's need. So I think, though, that one of the worst enemies of caregivers generally is this belief that we must do everything by ourselves or we're no good at all.
Where did that come from, by the way? That's an interesting notion.
Well, I think that in some respects, our culture in North America is based on values of independence and self-reliance, you know? And so caregiving as a team with paid help, family help, loving care in all its shapes and forms, together in a circle of care, it doesn't fit with this idea of self-reliance and independence. So I think sometimes that can be very harmful to us in creating feelings of guilt and just not rising to the occasion, which somehow translates to, I don't love you enough. I'm not loving you properly because you need care and I'm the principal person who has stepped up to give it. And then I think the second thing is that I've only really realized this more or less recently in my own life, but the challenge of accepting the people we love who have dependency needs, accepting them as they are and not trying to fix them, cure them, and wishing all the time that they were younger, healthier, more able, different. I think that I've just really come to the realization that a big part of our job is to accept the people we love with all of their givens, and we need to help them accept themselves with aging, disability, and chronic disease too. So we need to hold hands and try to accept it all together.
That's so good. You know, you're the first person who I've ever heard actually say that out loud, because we all think it, you know, that, God, yeah, I wish my person was younger or healthier or this and that. And, trying to fix things, you know, we love to fix things. But you mentioned promises made before. What about promises? Because I know caregivers are doing this. I've almost done it myself, which means I did it. where we promise our loved one that, we'll never, like my mother, for example, like we'll never put them in a nursing home. It's not that we volunteer that information. Promise me you'll never stick me in one of those nursing homes, you know, and oh, I promise. And then all of a sudden the day comes that you can't handle them anymore and you have to stick them in an assisted living. It doesn't matter what the name is. To them, it's a nursing home, you know, and it's a place to go and die. How do you get out of that?
Well, I think everyone is going to be different. I think what we can promise the people we love is that we will do our best. And we will never abandon them, no matter where they live. We will, if they move out of home, we will visit them. If we will always love them and care for and about them. I think, though, that I think we need to be honest about what our limitations are as caregivers. I mean, our son requires 24-hour awake nursing care. Wow. And it's one-to-one care. And he has an awake nurse by the bedside. Mm-hmm. And They expected our family to do that level of care and to restart his breathing when he stopped breathing multiple times every night, needing to be repositioned for pain every 20 minutes. And naturally, you know, we crashed and burned. I did. And so
as we all would.
I mean, if we looked at the job description and the hours and the need to be fully aware, because you're doing ICU style nursing, including giving very strong pain medications and so forth, you have to be on the ball to do this,
or
you will make a mistake. And we have to acknowledge and claim our limitations, I think, as caregivers. And so to that parent who says, never put me in a nursing home, I think the response is, Mom or Dad, I love you. You are my heart. I will do my best. I will do my best. And when I can't do it anymore and I need help and we need to revisit this, we will have a conversation, but know that I have limits, but that I promise to do my best. And nobody can promise more than that.
Yeah. And how do you modify that? Because you already gave the promise. Now it's time to do it. And they're saying, but you promise. How do you get out of the promise you already made?
Oh, I think you have to say, I promised, and then circumstances changed. I promised based on the person you were 10 years ago or 5 years ago when I made that promise. I never imagined it would get this hard. Hmm. I can't do it anymore. I need help.
And
the situation has changed.
Yeah. It's a situation where in order for that person, your loved one, to get the best care.
Yes, absolutely.
That's right. I mean, be someone other than us.
Yeah, I mean, that is one thing that I realized. My mother, about 3 months ago, moved into assisted living, and we had all as a family made a promise together that we wanted Mom to live in her apartment until she died, and we would support her in that. And we realized that we couldn't do it. We realized that other people care for her better than we can. And that was a very hard realization and humbling, because I do this for a living. I mean, I talk to caregivers and coach
right.
them and write about it. And here I felt, oh my gosh, anybody would look after Mom better than me and my sister right now. Cause she won't take her medications. If we tell her, she's not agreeing to get dressed. She is getting up and, you know, and trying to get down the stairs by herself, and she fell. We realized that in a different set of circumstances, she is going to be better, stronger, healthier, and there is a different dynamic about getting her to look after herself if somebody else tells her to do it.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like when your kids behave perfectly at school and then they come home and they're like,
now, let's talk about kindness. That's a commodity that is in short supply many times when you're caregiving. Patience and kindness. But why is it so important? I mean, why do we need patience and kindness? Why can't we just do the job? And, you know, if somebody gets you mad, you know, you yell at them and then you make up and this and that. Is it better to lose your temper and then, you know, kiss and make up? Or is it better to not lose your temper in the first place?
Well, You know, I became very interested in kindness when I thought of what I needed most from healthcare professionals in helping me look after our son. And I remember saying a long time ago in the hospital, because he was what we call a lifer in our children's hospital. He simply was very, very ill and palliative for a couple of years. He didn't die, but he was very, very ill and in the hospital most of the time. And I remember saying to the doctor, I need one thing. I need you to be nice to me. And I was so vulnerable at that time. And I reflected a lot about that. And I actually have written about this. What I was asking them was to be particularly kind to me. I needed them to be really nice. I mean, nicer, like to make a particular effort to do that. Because I was so tired and so distraught about losing my son. And I think that that gave me sort of a springboard to reflect on kindness throughout caregiving. And I think what the conclusion that I came to was that kindness is no longer a public virtue. We, if we are kind to each other publicly.
In Washington, especially.
Yeah, yes.
Well, it's a hell of a, it's some business. Example.
Well, I mean, if you, well, yeah, if you look at LinkedIn and you look at the, you know, how to succeed in business, it's not talking about kindness. It's talking about those get it done faster, quicker, go for what is most expedient, how to get ahead. I think the message that we get all over the place about kindness is that kindness is for losers and for people who really don't have the guts to be anything else. But kindness is who we are as caregivers.
I'm curious how your doctor reacted to that.
Well, you know what? I gave a keynote to the American Association of Cerebral Palsy and Developmental Medicine last year. And there were probably 1,000 pediatricians in the room. Mm. And it was all about kindness. And the conversation that we really want and need from medical professionals and the way that we need to be supported when everything is going wrong with our loved one. I think when we're at our lowest point, it's not that complicated to be kind. But I think that medical school doesn't teach it, and I think they actively discourage it.
Look at that face, Adrian. Can you imagine someone not wanting to be kind to that beautiful woman?
I think having someone that is a beautiful woman ask it of you, being pretty does help. It does. There's no question about it.
I think pretty people are treated kinder than people who are not as pretty.
That's true.
Which is sad.
That's right.
And women probably are treated kinder than men. I don't know. These are just my crazy thoughts off the top of my head, unfiltered.
Well, sometimes women are treated like they don't know anything. Yeah. It's still like, well, you're just a woman, you wouldn't understand. You know, so.
I was watching TV last night and they were doing some old television and they did Rowan and Martin's Laughing. And Goldie Hawn was up there just acting like a goofball, you know, just acting like an airhead. And I remember at the time thinking that she was really like that until I saw an interview that she's really very intelligent.
Yes, so, you know. She is.
Yeah.
Well, let's.
Well, I think in you know, it's really interesting what you say, Dave. And I'm going to really go away and think about the gender differences in the way that we are treated. I think there has been a little bit of research on male caregivers and their approach. They are better at delegating, apparently, according to the research. They approach caregiving more as a business plan, but they don't seek emotional support, and they need it. And that's why we need to support male caregivers differently from the way that we support women caregivers, which is really interesting. In a way, you can just look at it as a cultural difference almost.
It is.
But I think, yeah, but I think kindness in the medical profession and the people that we want and need to support us with, because a lot of us have just multiple connections with people in the medical profession, whether it's physiotherapists, OTs, doctors, specialists, GP, you name it. We're at the doctors all the time. And, you know, it's interesting. I was part of a research project recently, and it was on how to tell parents of newborns with neurological injuries that their baby is injured in the neonatal ICU. And I said on this phone call with all these like highfalutin doctors, you know, I said, really, I think this is a good paper. I think we've done a good job. And it will be useful for medical students who need to have these difficult conversations with families. But we haven't used the word kindness, and I think we should. And one of the doctors said, oh, yeah, this we can't. We can't use that word. Maybe if it was a nursing paper.
Okay.
That's
a good.
Which.
That's a good time to take a break. Let's just think about that. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech-impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words, overcoming unbelievable hardships, is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music, Andre Crouch? Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. You'll be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Available everywhere, but if you purchase your copy directly from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com, Charlene and David will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy!
And we're back with Donna Thompson and our co-host Adrian Gruberg and me. I'm Dave Nassani. Are you still there, Donna?
I am. Yes, I am.
There's your outline. So how can we advocate for help at home? I mean, everyone, that's probably the most biggest complaint, the biggest complaint. I want proper English here, that I get on my posts, I know you probably do as well, Adrian, is that I have no help. I have 23 siblings and none of them will help me. And, you know, I lost my job and I tried to get help from the government and they said no. And so how do we do that, Donna?
Advocating for care is actually one of those things like learning to use a new phone on a new operating system. You need to put work into it at the beginning to set it up. I think there are a few things that are absolutes when you go into advocating care. The first thing is that you need an advocacy team, and it doesn't have to be big. It really can begin as one person helping you figure this out. Because I think the first few things that you need to do are accept that you need help and decide what kind of help that you need that would be helpful. If you ask a very overwhelmed caregiver what they need, they usually will say, and I've said in the past when I've been very overwhelmed, I have no idea what I need. I just send somebody, anybody, anytime. I don't care. I have no idea. Don't ask me to think of specifics here. And so I think, you know, somebody to sit down with you who's going to say, okay, we're going to break this down. We're going to make a list of people you know who have ever said, if there's anything I can do. And then you sit down and think of three things that you would actually be helpful. One of them might be dog walking. Another might be every Wednesday night, deliver a meal. If you say every Wednesday night, deliver a meal, go through your friends list, family list, who has ever said to you, I like cooking. Then, you know, it's a matchmaking process that you need to do. And you need to draw the line between what that one little thing, and it's hard to even figure out what that one little thing is. And some, you know, it's just as hard for you, but it's just as hard for those 23 family members to figure out what it is too. So my mother-in-law, for example, when Nicholas was young and was in surgery all the time and was at death's door, it was very, very difficult at home. And she said, oh, now, dear, if there's anything I can do, but I'm sure there's nothing I can do. She was petrified by what was going on in my home. And one day, I don't know what made me say it, but I said, well, Jean, maybe you could make us a banana bread. She said, oh, I'd love to make you a banana bread. She was so grateful to be given something that she could do, because I think she thought I was going to ask her to change surgical dressings,
Yeah.
Or something. Lord knows what was in her mind. She was, right. didn't have, you know. And so sometimes just thinking of the small things that people could help with, that's once a week, once every 2 weeks even. Right. These are, that's the way to begin.
Awesome.
And are you familiar with Helping Hands, Donna?
I am. Helping David. Hands is fantastic.
I mean, Helping Hands is something that more and more people should know about. It's not just that everybody else needs to know that there are people who really do need help, and you might want to help people, and you can go to them and actually become a helping hand.
Yes,
a total stranger. You know, the. Yeah.
We lost some of your words.
And then there's Share the Care, where you bring together in a room all the people that you know and get them to commit to helping. Like, I'll go for the groceries, or I'll pick the kids up, you know, and you put together a universe that you can draw from. And they volunteer.
Yes, that's right. And we, you know, I've been working for many years now with an organization called Planned Lifetime Advocacy Networks. And there are affiliates all over the world, but basically what it is just what you've described, Adrian. It's how to coordinate a network of personal support. Mm-hmm. And there are online tools to do this, including one that we use in our family called Community Ties, T-Y-Z-E. And then there's Lots of Helping Hands, which is another tool that many people know about, Caring Bridge. But I think the secret of those models actually working is to break down what kinds of help would be helpful and break up your needs into tiny little pieces that people can actually do.
Yeah. You know, we tell caregivers all the time, you know, that they need to care for themselves, self-care. And often they ask, you know, well, how is it possible to look after myself when I can't leave home? I have no way to leave my loved one alone. I'm always caring for someone who needs, you know, me all the time. What hope do they have of self-care?
I think, you know, there's a good reason that I called my book The Four Walls of My Freedom, because I had to find a way to be free and have some choices to make a good life. Within those four walls, because I could never leave for many years. So I came to the conclusion, or I came to understand, that I needed to think of a way to care for myself at the same time that I was caring for my family. So not separate from, not
a
having
twofer.
A bubble bath later. Yes, a twofer. So, because I used to think, oh, I'll look after myself after. You know, if I feel cold, I'll put a sweater on Nicholas. If I feel thirsty, I'll give him a drink. And I began to think, every time I'm going to get that sweater for him, yes, but I'm going to get one for me. I'm going to get him a drink, and I'm going to get one for me. And I began to think in that way, need by need, care action by care action, there'd be one for him and one for me.
Does it work and with baths?
It does. It does. And it's going to look very different for every person. Sometimes it's just a conversation. So, for example, this morning I was speaking with my son, but this may ring true with fathers as well. And he phoned and he told me about lots of stuff in his life, and he also wanted me to do all these things. And then I said, okay, so now, Nicholas, you're going to say, Mom, how are you? What's new with your life? And I said, you know, I haven't been feeling that good recently. I think I need you to say something really nice to me. Like, maybe I need you to say, I love you, Mom. And so he did. And I said, so are you interested in this conversation? And he laughed and he said, no. I said, that's okay, because I am. And, you know, really, I was leading this. I was putting words in his mouth.
Leading
the witness.
What the
hell? I needed to hear it. So.
Yeah, sometimes you have to ask for what you want and need.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. And even if it's just within the conversation, it's finding time to give yourself some self-care in conversations that are sometimes just circular and go round and round, and they're always about that other person. You have to stop and say, nope, we're going to take some time about me.
Yeah, well, listen, we've got to take another break. Sorry. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Anytime we suffer loss, we grieve. And a lot of people don't realize what even the grief process is. But it could be 5 to 7 steps ranging from denial. I don't believe this is happening. Anger. Oh my gosh, I'm so upset this is happening. To a form of bargaining, how can I get out of this? To depression, which is a very serious thing because that often leads to suicide. And then finally, after you realize you have no more control over your situation and you're totally okay with the new normal that it brings, that wonderful, wonderful place called acceptance.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them.
And we're back with Donna Thompson and Adrian Gruberg, and I'm Dave Nassani. So how is it possible to be creative, Donna, while caregiving? You just gave a couple examples. Those were great. Keep going.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, it's interesting. I think everyone will discover a way to be creative for themselves, depending on their interests and their personality. I didn't know. I had no way to be creative. And I thought, you know, because I can't leave home and I'm always waiting for the next crisis and I'm always looking after people in my family, I'm not going to be able to be creative, because I defined creativity as being an actor or director, because that's what I was before I had my kids. I worked in theater, I studied theater, and I thought, well, that's over for me. And so I thought, well, what can I do that is creative? And I felt that I was looking after people who might die all the time, and I found creativity in my garden right outside my door. And I was able to make things grow, which really filled my heart. And I was able to play with color and design and things that I didn't even know I was good at. I'm not really good at it, but I thought I made something beautiful that was beautiful to me. And I just loved it. And that, you know, helped me develop the motivation to look for different ways. I thought, I can dance alone in my house to my favorite music. I can open my jewelry box. And I can open my jewelry box, and with my mom, we can try on jewelry from her box and mine. I mean, you know, looking at old photos and reminiscing is a creative, enriching experience because it becomes storytelling.
That's also bonding. It's a wonderful bonding experience with a new, you know, when your parent becomes different than they were.
Yes.
I'm getting goosebumps.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And what about friendships? You know, one of the things that most people do is they abandon the friends, start becoming isolated. How can we maintain those very important friendships when you don't have any time?
Well, sometimes we don't need to maintain them. Sometimes the friends we had before we became caregivers are not going to be good friends to us as caregivers.
Good point.
And, you know, and we need to just accept that, I think. I remember when my father had, he had three strokes and subsequently passed away. But after he had his first stroke, my mother, I remember how sad and angry that my mother was that our friends had deserted us. She certainly felt that they did. They didn't come to see my dad after he lost his speech. And I think, I don't know, you could guess why. Maybe they didn't know how to speak to a person.
Yeah.
They wouldn't know what to say. They were afraid.
It's hard.
And
same thing happened to my wife.
It is
and
hard.
We lost a lot of good friends. They came by in the beginning, you know, to be polite and sociable. But they just, you know, the numbers just drifted down to this day. It's been 21 years since her stroke. There's one person that continues to look us up and at least once a month, you know, take her out to lunch or a movie. And she has to travel 35 miles to do it. And every time I tell her, I says, you're a good friend, Helen.
Yeah. But I guess my question to you would be, two questions. One would be, how do you maintain that friendship? And the other question would be, do you have new friends that you've made since your wife became ill?
Of course, yeah.
You know, I remember that our across the street neighbor became a really good friend. And before my father's stroke, my mother hadn't thought, I have nothing in common with this woman. I'm not really her friend. But oh my gosh, then she started being the one to show up.
Yeah.
And we all fell in love with her. Yeah.
She was a natural caregiver.
Yes.
Some people need to be needed.
Yes, they do. And we certainly discovered her and got to know her, allowed her in. And after, because she's the one who showed up. And, you know, it's interesting, a lot of our other friends, they fell by the wayside, like Dave said, you know? And we just have to say, okay, that's okay. Who's showing up here? And I'm going to nurture those friendships.
I think that that's very important, knowing when to let go of the friendship and not feeling like they're deserting you. I mean, it's not a matter of them being good friends or not being good friends.
Think
people are afraid. It's almost like my situation is contagious, and I'm very uncomfortable in it, and I just don't know what to say, and so I just won't call. I won't have any part of it, and then there are the people who are creative and figure out ways to work your way into, you know, continue the relationship. It's not easy.
Yeah, I've been to a lot of funerals.
No, it isn't.
And the ones that are packed and they can't fit any more in there are the people who've made, you know, other lives feel like they're special. And I've been to many funerals that, boy, you know, you can count on two hands and two toes or 2 feet how many showed up. And you wonder how many connections. There's a difference.
That's right. And the other thing is that sometimes the way to maintain those friendships is to ask them to do one small thing. And in a way, that's like giving a gift to someone. That's like saying, I guess fundamentally, friends who have been your friend, they will want to help, but they're afraid. So if you can think of one small thing you know they can do, that's going to make them feel really good.
Like make
about
banana
helping.
Bread.
Yes, exactly. But it's also going to have an added bonus of getting them over and demystifying your life as a caregiver, you know. And then maybe they'll be able to sit down and have a chat, and they won't be afraid to call you more. Maybe.
Once they see that you're still the same person, you know, now that you're caring for somebody else, you are who you were. Maybe even better than who you were. I'm better.
Well, hopefully. You know, some people, instead of getting better, they become bitter. Caregiving has changed them for the worse. And we don't want that. Yeah. So what about the caregivers for the future? I'm concerned that there aren't enough of them, you know, when we all get to be 80 and 90. And, you know, it's already pretty bad. What's your vision on the future and caregiving?
Well, I think that, like, we have an impending crisis of care. We have actually a lack of care security in the future of our society if we don't look at this as an opportunity to innovate. And I think that care in itself, so many people are going to need care because the demographics of aging are absolutely unbelievable.
Yep.
And so many people who will need care are going to be, you know, coming up. And all of these people will be beloved, you know. So we're going to have to figure it out. But I do think we need to align and join forces across disease groups, across ages, across abilities,
right,
and really claim care as an issue that affects everyone. Mrs. Carter, what's her first name again?
Rosalind.
Rosalind Carter. Yes, in her famous quote about that all of us, if we will have needed care, we will need care. We are a caregiver, whatever.
Right.
You know, this is an issue that affects everyone, but we have to create a social movement of care, the same as the environmental movement. And I wouldn't even be surprised if we started a political party like the Greens, except for care, because we need to weave support for caregivers throughout governments at every level, in business, in faith groups, in families, in every way. We need to make it easier to care. Yeah, in every way.
The new minority.
Well, it's
the new majority.
It's the new majority. It's if you think about it in the election, in the process of debates and everything else, the word caregiving or care never came up.
No,
and we are a major chunk of votes. Mm-hmm. I mean, the number of adult caregivers of voting age, it's huge.
Both Obamacare and Trump care never came up.
Nope. So, go ahead.
I think we are invisible and care is not valued, but there are people beginning, there are rumbling. I mean, ARP is doing a lot of political advocacy, caring across generations, in joining personal support workers with family caregivers to create a movement, a political movement, to shift attitudes. Because there needs to be a cultural zeitgeist, you know, in shifting attitudes toward valuing care. And I think we can do it, and I think the numbers are going to do it. One trend I think is bad is robots looking after people. I don't like that at all.
Well, I know.
I think I'm all for technology and homes and smart homes, etc. But I don't think robots do a good job of looking after people. I think people do a good job, and we need support in that.
I mean, I found myself one day thinking, here I am alone in my apartment talking to Alexa. Is this what my life is going to become? You know, or talking to my dog. Yeah, you know, it was a wake up call. Would it get sophisticated enough for Alexa to be able to answer different kinds of questions?
Just wait and see.
I think it's coming.
It's coming.
Listen, I can't believe how fast this hour has gone. We have so much still to talk about, but how can you be reached? Someone wants to speak to you, Donna.
Anyone can go on my website, the Caregiver's Living Room, which is www.donnathompson.com, and there's no P in Thompson.
Nope.
So it's it's Thomson. And the Caregiver's Living Room, and I blog very regularly there. And my book is called The Four Walls of My Freedom: Lessons I've Learned from a Life of Caregiving. House of Anansi Press, 2014.
Awesome. Adrian, how can we get a hold of you?
Okay, it's Adrian, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, at thecaregiverspace.org. The website is thecaregiverspace.org. And the Caregiver Space is our Facebook page, and we have communities now specializing in different groups.
Yes, how many now?
I think about 7 that are robust.
Well, again,
I'm on those groups, Adrian. They're great.
Yes.
I'm glad.
And I'm on some of them as well.
Uh-huh.
Some of them won't let me in as possible, or they are all, you know, they like to keep it to the, you know, if it's cancer, they want to make sure that you're a cancer person, not a stroke person.
Right.
Is that how it goes?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's some screening involved. Yeah.
All right. I won't get my feelings hurt then.
No.
And again,
don't.
A reminder that all our live shows become recorded pod and video cast on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. Or if it's easier, remember DaveTheCaregiver.com also will work. And while you're there, don't forget to take our short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout, because you may not know that you're burned out. Just for doing that, I'm going to send you my first book absolutely free, a $10 value. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardship, My Wife's Amazing Story, After Her Devastating Stroke. Donna and Adrian and everyone listening, thank you again. So until next Wednesday at noon Pacific time, may God richly bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.